Chris Delaney, Passchendaele. Passchendaele is a condensed version of a much longer narrative poem from my new collection, Mapping Shadows. It's concerned with the camaraderie shared among young soldiers amid the horrors of trench warfare. Passchendaele. Desperate for sunrise, Harry and I would hunker down, sharing last drops from some poor devil's rum ration, while rats scurried over our boots. When dawn came, we watched the dead swell, mist unravelling around horse and man among scuppered tanks, their guns trained on clouds. Hard to believe that one day's march away, birdsong from hedgerows startled ripening corn, where Harry and I sat beneath the willow, attuned as newborn twins. On the 4th of November, 1917, a shell exploded at Harry's feet in the Ypres salient. Deafened and bleeding, I cowered by the fire step, watching limbs and clods of earth rain down around me. Harry's head rolled by my boots, slowed and came to a halt. I didn't speak for 3 days after crawling to the dugout, with it cradled inside my tunic. Wouldn't look at the wagon, waiting to take him and our comrades away. Despite being shrouded in a ground sheet, I wanted to believe among that wrangle of butchery and flies, his blue eyes still sought mine. I was taken to a dressing station, spent the rest of the war in a locked ward back in old Blighty, wishing I'd flung forward over the top unbidden and unarmed on the day Harry died at Wipers, when I'd hollered across no man's land, begging Fritz to lay me on my back, staring up at heaven until crows skewered my eyes. But I also considered the migrating chevrons of geese flying over Passchendaele that autumn, each bird taking a turn to lead, slicing through the air's resistance with instinctive esprit de corps, each saving the energy of a fellow following in its wake. Vincent. This was published in the Ver Open Competition 28 anthology. It is a narrative poem describing true events concerning a school friend who, sadly, went very badly off the rails. Vincent, In Memoriam, 1959 to 1983. I recall the drawing your little sister made, a crayoned birdcage enclosing approximations of beak and claw, and her need to show us when we burst in with a jar of minnows to tell how Mrs. Miller parted fighting dogs with her bare hands. A steam iron hissed, your stepmother scolded, your stepfather creaked slowly upstairs. Soon after, I caught you drowning a cat in the brook. We fought until it recovered and slunk off, and I vowed never to speak to you again. Years passed. I saw you striding along, an automaton. Hair as blonde as the pine shavings we scuffed into piles by my father's shed. By autumn, newspapers had reported you killing a tramp on a park bench. Some time after, a fellow offender throttled in your cell with a pyjama sleeve. Aged 24, your last breath escaped through a barred window of Broadmoor Hospital as you swung from a noose made from your bedsheet. I still have two photos of you and me, one of us paddling in Sunnybank Brook, wincing at the sharpness of gravel, the second by my pedal car, with Flying Squad emblazoned on the sides. This poem was inspired by one of my own acrylic paintings, although the argument itself is pure fiction. After the argument. Long ago, I sat braced among pebbles on Dunwich Beach behind an easel, while a few feet away, breakers hissed along the margins, and gusts strummed the rigging of stranded boats. In the minutes before dusk, I captured your assumed nonchalance as you stood in the middle distance, scowling along a curve of shingle, hands balled inside pockets. Now I look up on the wall to a moment framed and eyes half closed, remix highlights from that day. Coax your figure to turn, smile, and exclaim over the magical quality of light. Infidelity. This was published in the Verb Poets Open Competition 2013 anthology. Infidelity. She watches his slow progress toward her along the carriage, bearing snacks and coffee. Mirror image swaying in time above her eye level, interrupted by the backs of seats. A pattern of light panels overhead recedes with narrowing angles, like half-recalled sketches from a drawing class. He sits and turns to face her, checking his iPhone left on the seat for messages. She considers their joint graduation, marriage, twin boys, and will tell him she's read his texts when they reach the terminus. Strange that parallel lines appear closer the further they travel through distance, but only merge as they reach a vanishing point. Dreaming of Dolphins. This won second prize in the Verb Poets 10 Liners Competition 2015. This poem is about the fear of losing someone close. Dreaming of dolphins was your way of evading storms, motoring below waves toward tranquility. But last night we sped overland, powered through driving rain while sirens keened above the wind. A monitor beeped like echolocation, searching along flattened peaks. You plunged deeper, and I took your hand, tried to conjure sunlight, sensing your long smile surfing the bow wave beside my eyes, as we followed our noses to an unfamiliar shore. Children of Clay. This poem won second prize in the Verb Poets 10 Liners Competition in 2016. Children of Clay. Maggie, my first, awaits repair under tarpaulin behind our gazebo, missing one finger and her nose. Joe grew muscular, fulfilled aspirations in Simon Fondu until his mishap on the stairs. Vanessa's been my favourite since I eased her head from a cast of flicked plaster, dug out debris from delicate nostrils. Mounted on a block of polished oak, she overlooks the garden. Lunching with Mother. We sat at an old pine table, listening to the wireless, while I traced patterns with a fork, played with my corned beef hash. I'd almost finished a collage of Grandpa when our cat squeezed in with a carp from Mr. Pepper's pond. The doorbell rang and Mother rose as the fish backflipped on Lino. Mum, I said gently, you do realise you died 6 years ago, don't you? She floated past the Rayburn, stared with quiet outrage over fading horn-rimmed spectacles. I always said there was something funny about this house, she hissed in a stage whisper, frowned, then disappeared. For Vanessa. This was commended in the Verb Poets 10 Liners Competition 2012 and is about the loss of a loved one. For Vanessa. After our guests quietly left, I couldn't stay inside but sought harmony of birds, neutrality of trees. When daffodils trumpeted, I cut them short, harvested tulips while tight in bud, before bees hummed their elegy. In June, when buddleias bloomed by the trellis, A butterfly uncoiled fragile seconds from a watch spring tongue, scaled a fence to dwindle on mown grass wind. Late autumn, I succumbed to shifting cloud patterns, strode back indoors and opened her nursery windows.
Beyond the Mirror by Sandra Galton. This poem looks at how we sometimes suppress parts of ourselves. I have given it an epigraph by Nietzsche. To become wise, you must learn to listen to the wild dogs barking in your cellar. Beyond the Mirror. There's a dog down in the cellar, dog tired, stopped as a burnt-out log, paws awry, like scrapped faggots, ears flattened, damped. This is no way to keep him. No quickening comes from the muzzle, blue as dusk, tapering to cross-hatched snout. The night is long, he's done with whimpering, so still he might be flatlining. But wait, there's spark in him yet. His small rose ears twitch back. Give him a moment to catch his breath. Watch him shimmer into life. Now see him standing, front legs ramrod straight, hind quarters mirrored question marks, a spring unleashed. He is pacing wall to corner, wall to door. Open that door, give him air, watch him burst with matchless oomph, a blur. Applaud such zing, such naked light. See how it scorches, shameless. Keep up, he is yours. Extend your hand to touch him. He burns, but will not bite. Titan. This poem was inspired by hearing a crow repeatedly dropping a bone onto the flat roof above where I do most of my writing. At the time, I'd been reading a lot of Ted Hughes, and I allude to two of his collections here, Crow and Prometheus on his crag. Titan. Old Ted is up on my roof again, dropping bones to extract the marrow. I hear him more and more these days, so often I think he's moving in. It must be hard work with legs like that. I sense pain in his corvid waddle, and there is so much he has to shift. At times his hammering shows madness. Tap, tap becomes dum, then thwack. Followed by a lull, when I imagine his craggy skull contorting with angst. Old Ted, perhaps you are not able to fly, but are fettered there like Prometheus, alone on my roof, a glowing ember clutched in one claw, as you wait for the vulture to come gorge on your liver. Intruder. You first describe it on the phone to me. A small white flower, devoid of leaves, poking up between some gap. Extraordinary, freaky, you say, your voice almost breaking. I try to imagine how it looks to you. No leaves, you say, but I see only cyclamen or early snowdrop. Your second line, chemo, has begun. Later, I grasped what it meant, this denuded flower, you needing to pull it out by the root. There in your garden, calm, mute, we stare at the crack where the pale flawed bloom makes itself known, its harm, until now, hidden. Such audacity. I turn my back on its cool beauty. The Dystopia Game. Now, this is how we play. There are two teams, us and you. We'll be us, but we can also cross over and become you. We're only human. You get to speak first, but we prefer it if you don't ask questions. We have to work out what's wrong with you, but first you have to tell us what you think is wrong with you, or the game can't start. We have the right to remain silent, but if you remain silent, you lose a turn. We may tell you what we think you may be thinking. You may reply, but we may choose not to comment. Round 2. If you still don't know what's wrong with you, we'll set a timer, and for every minute that passes that you've shown no enlightenment, you lose points. We will decide how many. Telling us something we know already doesn't count. If you tell us something we don't know, we will file it. You may claim it back, but only when your score surpasses ours. Try not to invent. It'll get you nowhere. Points accrue from round to round. There is only one way to win, which we will determine as we go along. No, there are no clues. If you lose, we will cite you as an example of how not to play the game. Dear Blüthner, this is a sonnet written to my grand piano, which happens to be a Blüthner. Dear Blüthner, face to face, we are almost one. Yet there is a moment, in the black stillness of your gaze, when I do not wish to see myself, mirrored, almost naked, the new lover, a little shy. Unnerved by your soundless poise, your unflinching contemplation, I'm unsure now I want to play. But at my touch, your fingers give, answering mine, and I know nothing other than that this mutual pressure will fill the room with song. What is this thing? Goosegrass, maybe. We might not know it's there before we're chosen, caught by its charisma. Entwined round an ankle, it trails with us, loyal to step and stop for miles unless we notice. Beguiled, we'll wear it as jewellery until, tired of its spell, we concoct some antidote, call it by other names, Sticky Willy, Sticky Jack. Prize away the tiny husks, tell the hairs, relax. Sometimes the thing bristling is tricky to locate. We're strangers to its genus, yet we'll smart with each graze, flinch as barbs gnaw beneath our lairs. Stripping gives uncertain relief, where there's no balm, no mother's milk. This kind can bleed for long, feral hooks, embedded in the self, govern their own exit. Raw, the psyche should be primed for flight, but you will always search on moonless nights, stumble, gravity your enemy, into the unlit, where this thing might be true. With luck, you'll land flat, merely winded, look up at the height from where you've fallen, eyes widening like the pitch, and you will realise what? That you and I, we both are fallible in its gaze, its grip. But belief is not laughable.